PHOÖ International. Studierende und Lehrende der Pädagogischen Hochschule Oberösterreich blicken über den Tellerrand und berichten von ihren Erfahrungen. Ein Podcast produziert von Maria Michelmann und Christian Kogler.
Welcome at Terra FM. This interview will also be recorded and broadcasted as podcast at PH International. The topic today is teaching in times of war, and our guests are Svitlana Broska from Dragomanov State University in Kiev and Niels de Jong, head of Third Mission Dialogue and Transfers at University of Education Upper Austria. Regarding this topic, I learned you are involved in a research project. Niels, maybe you can tell us more about it.
Thank you, Gareth, for the invitation. And we have in 2023, when all the Ukrainian refugees and a lot of children were coming to Austria, we saw the need in schools to support these children. And the European Union has a program that's called KA171. It's a grant program where you can apply. And we developed a project with the idea to work with Ukrainian universities who sent us students. These students work in Austrian schools in the practice, and there they support Ukrainian children in learning German and maybe psychological problems. They help parents to translate. They provide support with many different things. So this project started in 2023. We have now 4 Ukrainian universities who are partners, and we have 7 schools in Upper Austria who work with us. The school board, the Bildungsdirektion, supports us too, and it's a very effective program. It has helped a lot of children, and now slowly the program is not just staying with Ukrainian children. It's also spreading out to children with immigration, international backgrounds. So it has become a really effective, wide, supportive program. And we have Svitlana here as a guest professor from Dragomanov State University, and she supports us here with her expertise, her advice, and just how can we do things better.
Okay, thank you, Niels. Svitlana, you are here to support the teachers who are already here, who are teaching in schools. As I understood, these teachers from Ukraine are student teachers.
Yes.
Yes. So I think it's very, very valuable to have real practice in the classroom, to develop all the personal way of teaching. Yes. So maybe you can tell us more how you are involved in supporting these teachers and what your function is.
Thank you. My name is Svitlana Protska. I'm from Kyiv, Dragomanov State University. I'm a doctor from education and pedagogical, and I'm teaching in my university social philosophy of education policy, and all of kind of education. So now I'm inviting by Niels de Jong to mobility and like supporting the teachers from Ukraine, student teachers, to invite that share our experience how we survive in war, and they support us in our teaching our students and the students that came here, and teaching pupils from Ukraine and other countries. That's why we need this mobility to share our experience.
Okay, quite interesting. From my experience, I learned that Ukrainian children are very, very eager to learn. And one issue usually when you come to another country is the different language and maybe the different cultures. So is this a big issue, and how do you, can your teacher students help?
Oh, thank you. Our student teachers also have some kinds of problems with language, but they very smart students, and they fast learning, and then they helping these pupils. And I was in two schools, and so our Ukrainian pupils that came here 2, 1 year before and 3 year before, and the people that have 3 year before writing here, they already learn Deutsch, and they learning with another pupils like their sphere. But the people that came here now, they have really problems with the language, and our teacher students help them a lot, and not only language, with psychological problems, maybe have problems like live in another country, and they share the advice how it can be. So it's really great. It's really needed to have such advice from your native person from your country.
Okay, I see. Yeah, thank you, Svetlana, for this insight. Niels, I'm an e-twinning ambassador myself, and I promote this idea of bringing Europe together and nations together. This research project is based within an Erasmus project, I understood. So what is the goal within this project? What is the research question you are following?
Well, thank you. That's a good question, of course. The kind of like what Svetlana pointed out, can we effectively support children with a war refugee background? Can we help them to become students, good students here in Austria? And then secondly, how can we help them to go back to Ukraine and be reintegrated into the society there? So really there are two questions. Mm-hmm. One is the integration into the culture and society language in Austria, which is quite difficult. And then secondly, but then how in the long term can we put them back into Ukraine, mm-hmm. and help to build Ukraine back up again? Of course, this is a big problem for the future for Ukraine. What does the future hold? The problem with the integration that we have seen here in Austria is that the Austrian school system supports when refugee children come, they can be like exceptional students for 2 years. So for 2 years, they can just learn German and learn some of the basics like geography, maybe some history, mm-hmm. some English, sports. But they miss a lot of subjects of the normal curriculum in that period. So after 2 years, maybe they can go to the next grade, but they're really not quite ready yet. And that is a problem what we see long term at the moment, is that some, like you said, some Ukrainian students are really good and very effective. And then there is a group who are not really catching on, and they will go from maybe the primary school to the middle school. Mm-hmm. In the middle school, at 14, it ends. Maybe they can stay 1 year extra to 15, and then what? So long-term integration in Austria, not knowing the German language is difficult for some, and then the reintegration into mm-hmm. Ukraine is also a very difficult question. But these are two of the things that we're really kind of trying to find an answer to, or at least try to help with.
Yes.
Yeah, I think it's never easy to be in a position of limbo like this when you are between two places, two cultures, mm-hmm. and not really knowing what the future would hold for you. At the very beginning, I can remember the first students who came to Austria, they were just short before the final exams, and I was highly impressed how Ukrainian teachers supported these students yes. from Ukraine, and the students were able to finish their final exams, yes. their matura, online, while at this time we still kind of struggled with online teaching and meets and all Zoom and whatever platform we used. Mm-hmm. I was very, very impressed how this was possible. What was a foundation the Ukrainian teachers managed to be so fast back then?
Oh, thank you. Yes, it's I was someone of this teacher that have online courses and help our students to have degree the programs. So yes, it was not easy. It was so hard because when 2022. February 2022, it was start big war, and 6 weeks, 6 months, we tried to how survive, because everything stopped, everything, it was a lot of destroyed, and higher education must go on, and we decided to have online course. We open university, and all teachers came to online system. Maybe helped where was COVID, and was background that we have basic elements, and our IT was grow up when everything shut it down in COVID. So we have such experience, and this experience we came to this situation, and all teachers and not like me, youngest and elder, have issue to have online courses.
Okay, see, I think you did a great job back then, because I knew some pupils from Ukraine. They went to school with my kids at this time, and I found it fascinating. First, learning the language here, trying to get a hold here in mm-hmm. the Austrian schooling system,
yes.
which was not easy, of course not.
Yes.
And at the same time, they did manage to pass the final exams. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Svetlana. Before we go on with our interview, some music. Welcome back to our topic, teaching in times of war. The conflict starting in Ukraine,
yes.
we saw it on television screens.
Mm-hmm.
It was something happening which was quite surreal. We would never have expected anything mm-hmm. like this would ever
yes.
again happen in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
The conventional way on the battlefield, one would say, especially for the Russian doctrine, would be coming in with battle tanks,
mm-hmm.
which they did, nearly going directly to Kiev.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, we all held our breath what would happen. And then we saw that the Ukrainian people withstood this big military force with a lot of ingenuity, with ideas, with innovation.
Yes.
We saw drones, cheap drones, being used against very expensive equipment.
Mm-hmm.
And also, we got the feeling that innovation must be a big foundation in the Ukrainian culture. So how does this convey to education?
Thank you. Actually, I want to start that the war started in 2013. And the big war started in 2022. So we have a long time to understand that Russian not stop. So innovation in our country help us to fighting with this aggressive friend that they called. But in education and we have a lot of move on, and we have a long of time to do, time to work from 2014 to now. And we have a large step to European standards, and we implement the standards like Bologna process. We started in actually in 2005, but in 2014 we have a law of higher education that basic on Bologna concept. So it start to move on in European standards. And in the 2016, we have a new start, a new page of all our education. So we have a new education in Ukraine. And this reform show us that we have a large of basic materials, but we combine with European standards, and this help our pupils to have the understand what they want to do in their future, in their profession, in their lives. So when it was started in 2016, we don't know that it was be a big war in 2022. So this move makes our life now, because if we don't have these moves to European standards, we don't have now education in Ukraine. So it helps to now to have such a big maybe a large move on in our education, because I saw that in your schools that not all of the pupils have issue in IT, but in our schools all pupils have issue in IT. Learn IT sources from the first class, from primary school. So, and this innovation, this IT helps them to have a great education in.
So it was an important impact in managing this situation, and also provide the connection to the pupils who already came to Austria and who needed to finish their final exams.
Because they can use IT service to maybe they don't know language, but they can use it and translate something, words that they don't know, or, and it helps them to implement or in this community.
I see. Okay. I also have a little bit of experience with the Eastern European countries. In my e-twinning projects, I work a lot with Romanian schools. Oh. And in summer, I've been there also to meet teachers, to work together. I also realized that these young kids in primary school are already well educated. I would say they are ready for programming, for block coding, in fourth grade primary school. Comparing this to Austria, are we a bit too slow? Are we a bit too blindsided? Or how would you describe this situation?
I'll probably have to be careful how I answer this question. There's always room for improvement, right?
That's just what, be polite.
Yes, it can always be better. I do just from the perspective of I work with students, incoming students from European countries who come to our university and study for a semester, and they are in a lot of classrooms in Austria. And they always comment about the fact that in Austria there is not so much technology in the classroom. Like if there is a working computer, they are very happy. Maybe there is a projector that works, or maybe they have to go get it from the Schulrat, from the assistant. Maybe there is a smart board, probably not. But that is slowly improving. So the ministry has put an emphasis on digital education. So slowly smart boards are coming into the schools, iPads are coming into schools, robotics comes into the schools. So it was maybe a little bit behind, but it is improving greatly and we're heading in the right way.
Okay, I also think we are going in the right direction. We will have a new curriculum for upper secondary classes in ICT, in informatics. Personally, I think informatics, I'm a teacher for informatics. Yes, of course. But I think it's a skill for the future. We need to learn because in the very end, we are all working with the same technology. And either we approach the technology like we did around 1900 when the steam engine came in, and some parts of the society were afraid and they didn't want it to come in, especially here in Upper Austria, in Mühlviertel. There was a lot of production for fabrics in, so to say, home office back then. And all these jobs, of course, got lost with the steam engine and industrialization. Personally, I think we are in a very similar situation with IT, with artificial intelligence, of course. So you give your students a very sound foundation in this field. Yes. And you said you improved your education system as well.
Yes.
You were forced to improve it very quickly.
Yes.
So what were the key components you had to change to improve your system?
Thank you. To improve our system, we have another methods in our teaching. We combine and maybe mixed offline and online our class. We have, when I'm teaching now student, I have a computer. I have class students in class, offline, they sit with me. But another half sit online for the computers. So I have a camera, I have my laptop, and I have people. And I mixed someone listen my lecture in front of me, and someone hear my lecture in online in their own homes or where they stay. So because we understand that our students can know only all of them can go to the classroom because higher education is cost a lot and they must to work. Other them in foreign all are they came out from safe place another country. So but we they want to learn in Ukraine. So we understand this, and we have mixed that students that sit in front of me or online. So it's difficult, but we do this and this new methods and another methods we have. Yesterday I have lecture with foreign students, and the lecture was Kari, and he real surprised that I'm asking, did they have goals from this lecture, because in our system every lecture our students have a goals, so they must have 100 goals to pass this course. So every lecture they are working to have marks.
I see. Yeah.
Yes, and this is so this another method that they learn, they want to learn to have marks.
I see. So it's I think it's a motivation for the pupils.
Yes.
Seeing this, I would say courage by the teachers who are staying back in Ukraine. They are not leaving the country.
Yes.
And supporting the pupils who are in other countries.
Yes, we support it.
And in teacher education, which special steps do you take to prepare your students for this hybrid teaching? In my point of view, hybrid teaching is one of the most difficult ways to teach. Going online only, okay, you have to be used to, you have to be tech savvy. Mm-hmm. Being in the classroom, nice, we are all used to this, and this is the training we have anyway. Yeah. But this mixture I find incredibly hard.
Yes.
So how do you have special courses for your students to prepare them for these situations?
We don't have special courses, but show it like for our example. On my own example, so they watch it like I do and they do in their professional. So, but if we call it about high school, it can be. But in primary school or secondary school, it not can resist, because they all go. But in region for region, it's position are different, because if we talk about Kyiv as a capital, it's protected by machine, by soldiers, and pupils can go to schools to learn and sit in class. If we say about Kharkiv, the east part of Ukraine, it's they learn in online. And only primary school go to school, but it's their school not in a building. Their school underground in metro. It's hard that they underground, because Kharkiv was a beautiful city with a large of education structures, a large of education institutes. We called this city was called city of students, but now it's real disaster. It's destroyed every yesterday was already destroyed preschool. Every day they have destroyed some education instructor in their city, it's difficult. So it's hard to say that Kharkiv is not now it's not city for students, not so city for pupils, because only primary school have lessons with their another person, but in underground, in metro, it's quite difficult.
So I think there's a lot of dedication also within these young kids going to these places, having to stay there.
Yes.
I mean, the easiest way might be to stay home, to stay safe, to stay in a safe place somewhere, and not necessarily go to places where people would assemble.
Mm-hmm.
Usually in military tactics, these are the first goals which any army would attack. So, Niels, this attitude towards learning, this attitude and this dedication towards learning, is this something our pupils could learn from?
Yeah, I think it's totally fascinating how, just listening to Svetlana, the challenge of destruction and just no hope for the future maybe, and are we going to be occupied? And despite all that, they go, well, we can do better. We can reorganize. We can, with less people, we can do more things. We can include technology. And that, I think, is definitely something I'm learning from, because it's like, yeah, you should not just be stuck where you are. And I think that is the danger for teachers anyway. It's like, you know, teachers, I don't know if this is true for modern women, but they said women in the old days, how they learned how to put on makeup, this is how they put it on for the rest of their lives. Mm-hmm. Now with YouTube videos, this is not totally the case, of course, but I have a family member who still puts on the eyeliner under her eyes. And this is an older lady, of course. And they used to do it in those days. And with teachers, sometimes the same thing can happen. You know, we kind of get stuck in the same ways, in the same approach. So it is really good to see that there are other ways. There is new ways to do it, two different ways to do it. And maybe not get stuck in the same way, but how can we learn? Also, maybe we are like not just to give, maybe we can also learn from you, and it's an exchange. And that is the important part here, I think.
Yeah, we also, you told us, Svetlana, mm-hmm. That your teacher students are learning by being in classrooms, mm-hmm. watching other teachers, watching experienced teachers. Yes. Is this something we would need more in the Austrian education system for teachers?
Well, one feedback I've gotten over the years, which I also really see with Ukrainian children in the schools, is our teachers have not really been prepared how to teach children with international backgrounds. They have gone through curricula, through teaching programs, and learned a lot of things, how to teach math, but maybe not how to teach subjects to children with other languages. Now, luckily, we have made a switch at the University of Education. We have, for the primary, we have a new curriculum, a three-year program. But every year now, they're getting a German as a second language. That's mm-hmm. emphasis. So they're learning more strategies how to reach children with other languages. And that is a real important thing for the future, to reach them. And I think for the secondary now, with the new teacher curriculum, also this will happen. So more strategies will come how to teach children with other languages, other backgrounds, of course, the inclusion background, how to reach children who have different learning styles, different processing ways. And so it's really important to include strategies long term to reach people maybe that we're not reaching all the way yet.
I see. So it's mutual learning from each other.
Yes.
Yeah. Before we come to our next block, please stay tuned for Teaching in Times of Wars. And we will come back after the music. Welcome back to Teaching in Times of War. In the music break, we talked about the situation in Kiev, the situation yes. in Ukraine in general. We talked about how privileged we are here. At first, I used the word maybe blindsided. We didn't expect it. And in a way, we cannot even imagine what the situation might be in these places. Maybe, Svetlana, you might give us a picture of what it feels like, what it is like for you. Working there, supporting children who are already abroad, mm-hmm. you stay there, and now the situation, you are here while your family, I learned, is still in Kiev still. And has to fear the attacks during the night.
Oh, thank you. I'm started, first of all, that when I was in school in childhood, reading about more books about a Second World War. And then I don't understand how people can live, how people can marriage, how can celebrate something in war. And now when we live in war, I understand. And now I'm here and my family is really glad that I'm here, not there, because two nights later and this night, Kyiv was damaged by drones, and electric station in Kyiv are damaged, and they live a half of day in darkness. So it's really hard and really to understand that no electric, no water, and no work, and they must go to market and buy a bottle water that have water. And now today they have shelter to light on, light down, and this calendar so for half they have an hour, they have hour, they know, and it's quite difficult to understand that I'm leaving Kyiv, have two houses, have left and right house, and by the river Dnipro, and I live in left, right. And my university, when where I'm working in right side, and so I came to university by bus and my metro, and metro stops because they must have electric, and I can't go to the work and can go went to my work, and I must take two or three buses to take to my work. And when I came to my work, all my work, I already said that we mixed. We have people in our classroom and people in online, or students, yes. So if that if I don't have electric, I don't have online my students. So I must have something that combined and that can achieve that my class. So we decided to have a course in like IT platforms like Google service, Moodle service, and when electric light down, light up, or turn and up, so that pupils that don't be in my lecture, they have tasks in that course, and they achieve their marks.
I so, see. So,
so we, it really difficult to have such issue to have lesson in class, have online course, have online students, and we must help this. We must help this and there that can't be in class.
I see. I see. So. You said you, for us, it was like the war now, or the conflict now began in 2013, you said.
Yes.
So this is like 10 years more than
more
our,
than 10 years,
our,
yes.
Our way of viewing this, maybe. I think not many of us were aware of the situation at this level. So you had time to prepare all these stages.
Yes.
So now you are prepared, you have teaching material.
Yes.
You said you're using Google, you're using Moodle.
Yes.
The pupils have the material prepared.
Yes.
So they can work on their own. Until now, we're lucky enough in Austria, I would say, not to have a blackout, but we know the situation which we had in Spain and France,
mm-hmm.
2 years ago, also in Serbia, where the Eastern European mm-hmm. countries were disconnected, the electric mm-hmm. service were disconnected,
yes.
because otherwise there would have been a bigger blackout for days, maybe weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So are we going in this direction? Are we preparing for this, Niels?
You know, interesting question, because I'm listening to you talk about this topic. It's so interesting. When I was younger, much younger, I was drafted into the Dutch army, then the military service. So I had to serve for 14 months. And the enemy, that was in the Cold War, the enemy at that time was Russia. We learned about Russian planes, Russian uniforms, Russian soldiers, Russian guns, strategies. We were listening in on their communications, like how they were talking to each other and what they were saying. So then slowly we got away from that. You know, we got the Russian oil, we got the Russian this, the Russian that, Russian money. And slowly, you know, Russia kind of went into the background and it was not seen as an enemy anymore. Since the war with Ukraine, it's very clear that this has now come back to the forefront. Russia, again, is considered at least a potential enemy for European countries.
Yes.
We are starting to stock up our military. We are getting maybe more soldiers, more weapons, more ammunition, preparing in a way for the war. So you're right. We're kind of going back or maybe back to reality, maybe almost, I don't know. But so you're right. So we really need to prepare, you know. We can't go back. We can learn from the lessons from Ukraine is how can we, even with maybe a similar threat, how can we go forward? How can we make our children better pupils? How can we prepare them for the future that we don't know what's going to happen? And that is, I think, the challenge for teacher education at this point. How can we really prepare our children to think critically? Artificial intelligence is maybe something that is also a very interesting topic. Like how can we prepare our children to deal with artificial intelligence? Now it's like ChatGPT, but ChatGPT is, you know, it's maybe the surface of it all. There's so much more under it that is potentially being worked on. From war and, you know, methods to home and electronics. I mean, everything. How can we prepare our children for the future? This is a really good question.
Yeah, we have split roads in a way, I feel. On the one hand, we have to, or it seems we have to prepare our kids for situations or aggressions from abroad, from Russia, maybe somewhere else. Who knows?
We don't know.
We don't know. Yes. At the same time, we have to prepare them with skills for the 21st century.
Yes.
So when I come back, maybe one word from your side again, the curriculum for primary school teachers changed, the training for the teachers changed. So do we take this into account? Do we take into account the situation of blackouts? How teachers should deal with this? I mean, I know we do have emergency planning in schools for blackout, for shootings, and we start to slowly go there. Who would have thought 10 years ago we have to go there? But are we training our future teachers in this direction as well?
I think slowly it's happening, but I'm still surprised. I lived in the United States for a long time. And if you come to a school in the United States, you cannot go into the school. The doors are locked. You can't just walk in. Some schools have metal detectors, you know. They check what do the students have with them. In Austria, still, most schools are open. You can walk in and, so I know that on the one hand, that's considered good because we want to have a safe and happy environment for our children. On the other hand, things happen like in Graz, you know, where crazy people do crazy things. It's very interesting, this dilemma that you, on the one hand, we have a dystopia for the future. You know, I think naturally, especially in my generation, we were looking for a utopian future. Everything is going to be better. We have such a beautiful world coming. We went through a horrible war and now life is getting better. And then the reality, life is maybe not getting better in certain areas, but in many others not. So from utopian view, and if you talk to a lot of young people now, really their view has changed to a dystopian, like the future. Are we going to have fish in the ocean? Is there going to be oil? How are we going to live? Is there going to be plants still? And this dilemma is very hard. And I don't really think we quite prepared for that yet as teachers, because I think we're still utopian. You know, we still want to make the best of the children. We want to have the best world for you. You're going to make it. You're going to be successful. But really, we should also, like what you pointed out, we should have some strategies, some ways to what if it is not peace? What if we have to worry if there's a drone falling on our head, you know? I personally think we should go and, but I think, I don't know what's going to happen because we still are utopian in our mindset.
Yeah, it's not going to happen unless it happens, yeah. I think. So then it might be quite a surprise for us.
We don't want that in Europe and being like in Ukraine. We all Ukrainians have your support. We appreciate your support, and we don't want that war came to you. We like a wall with Russia and Europe. And we, if you support us, we win. So we thinking positive. And it will be ending sometime. We understand it. In we win. We so we thinking that Europe will still like this, like now.
So a peaceful Europe,
yes.
A Europe united in the very end. Neil said he was drafted in the Dutch army. I'm also actually information officer in the Austrian Armed Forces in the military reserve.
Mm-hmm.
And one of our tasks actually is to convey the idea of, it's called in German, umfassende Landesverteidigung,
mm-hmm.
which has several components, economical components, the military components, but also the component which is directly connected to teachers. Teachers should be aware that they have to prepare the students, the pupils, for situations like this. We learned that you are incredibly brave in the end to do this. Yes, thanks for your service at the front in the very end, because I think everyone who is thinking about what's happening there should be aware that the lives sacrificed,
yes,
is lives not sacrificed in Austria, not sacrificed in Germany. Maybe NATO has to go there directly, also mm-hmm. In a military way. But coming back to schools,
mm-hmm.
What would be your advice to build up this resilience you have?
Oh, it's difficult to say that. You really must understand that we must to learn how to survive in war, and if you have our example, so if you will learn, if in our example you will survive too. So you. Now in Ukraine, we have in secondary school already all pupils learn military skills subject have. So it starts from a little and to grow up. Europeans must understand that if they learn in our example, they can be peaceful in their lives.
Thank you, Svetlana, for the insight, for your advice in the very end, for a future which we hope will never take place.
Yes.
Niels, one last word. Within the project, would there be one of the outcomes, the lessons learned, which we could implement in our school system?
Yeah, we hope we can come up with some suggestions, some advice, how to effectively reach children, not just with language, but on a holistic scale, like from language to family to future. And I think this actually is for all children, maybe in the way which you said, you know, we want to have children who can think critically, who can analyze the situation, who can come up with a solution. And I think of all the things, or maybe that is the bottom line conclusion, how can we really help children to develop this mindset that they can be ready for the future, even if they don't know what the future is. And if we can achieve that, I think even from this project or from being teachers like you are, then we can do that. That would be great.
Yeah, thank you, Niels. I hope we can find a way through these times of crisis. Hopefully we come to, well, peace terms,
yes,
in a way Ukraine can deal with in the very end. We know what happens if a country cannot deal with the negotiations and the contracts we might have afterwards. Thank you, Niels, for being here with us. Thank you, Svetlana.
Thank you.
And
I appreciate.
Dear viewers, I wish you a nice evening, nice afternoon. Maybe it was a way to think about the situation, appreciate what we do have in Austria. We still do have in Austria. Not complain too much, but go forward, find new ways, do critical thinking, but at the same time, be prepared, as the scouts say, even for the worst situations. Thank you. My name is Gerald Landl for Terra FM.
Das war PHOÖ International. Abonniere und sei dabei.